Hey everybody, it's JT. What is on your holiday meal shopping list? Well, I would suggest Painted Hills Natural Beef. It is some of the best beef in the world. And your friends and family will be thanking you for a long time if you serve Painted Hills Natural Beef for your holiday meals. And now you can buy it online just by going to PaintedHillsBeef.com. Use the code BBQNATION at checkout and save yourself 15% on your order. Give Painted Hills Natural Beef a place on your table this holiday season.
It's Barbecue Nation with JT on a Northwest Lifestyle Weekend. Now here's JT.
Hey everybody, welcome to the nation, the Barbecue Nation. I'm JT in our Turn It, Don't Burn It studios in beautiful downtown Portland, and we welcome all of our affiliates that share this time with us on the Radio Northwest Network, and my buddy Camaro Dave, he is out driving around in his elf suit. He's got a little tassel on, but I won't go into personal details, but he's got a little tassel on. It's time to do Christmas. Yes, and every year at Christmas, we ask our buddy Meathead Goldwyn from AmazingRibs.com to come in and talk with us, and our music this weekend is Christmas music. Imagine that. Reached out to some of my friends in the country music business, and they're going to shed a few tunes for us, and this portion of Barbecue Nation is brought to you in part by Painted Hills Natural Beef from the heart of the Pacific Northwest. Beef you can be proud of and feel good about serving your family. And if you put it on your table, this is a little personal note here. If you put it on your table at Christmas, people are going to love you. I can tell you that. Anyway, Meathead, welcome.
Hey, good to be back. Always fun to talk to you.
Ah, it's great. We have such a great rapport or rapport or whatever that word is. It's works pretty good. So I'm going to set this up for you. Okay. We've got Christmas is... You know, just by the time this show airs, just about 10 days off. And people are, you know, they think they've got their menu in their mind and stuff. That's great. And they're going to go spend some pretty good dollars on a piece of rib roast, you know. And, of course, we've talked before that the nomenclature about prime rib, that has to do with the quality of meat, not the rib roast, blah, blah, blah. And so I kind of hope people understand that. If not, I'm sure you will educate us on that again. But I don't want these people spending a good chunk of money, you know, if they're buying a higher quality cut of meat, which can be, you know, upwards of $200 in some cases, and let them turn it into, you know, an old desert boot type thing.
Yeah, there's some tricks to cooking prime rib. And you're right. The last one I bought last Christmas was $203. It was around 15 pounds. It gets its name prime rib because it comes from the rib primal. A steer's major chunks of the animal are called primals. You've got the rib primal and the shoulder and so on, and these are all different hunks of beef. So it's the rib primal or the prime rib. There are different grades of beef, starting with El Cheapo cuts called Select. The better cuts are USDA Choice, or you can occasionally find USDA Top Choice, and then there's USDA Prime. And they're all measured by how much marbling. It's that little lacy fat that's inside the muscles or in between the muscles that determines the grade of meat, and that determines the price, and it also determines the flavor because fat carries a lot of flavor. So it's the fat within the muscles, not on top of the muscles, that really counts.
Well, I'll tell you what, if fat is indicative of the flavor, you and I are two of the most flavorful guys on the planet.
I have a very well-marbled carcass.
I had a guy that used to work for me, and he was a shorter guy, and he was always pretty round, good-natured fellow. And he'd say, yeah, I'm about 20 pounds from going to the kill plant. So when we had Will Homer on last week from Painted Hills, and he's a friend, and I've worked with those folks for a long time, and they make a great product. And he was kind of given the background of the whole beef industry and the whole process and everything like this. It's very interesting. I'll send you a link to that interview. But
yeah, I want to hear that.
But what's interesting about that, I think, is the fact that a lot of these companies now are having a tough time actually not grading close to prime. You know what I mean? They've got this stuff down to a science, especially for Painted Hill, Snake River, you know, whatever, these kind of higher-end companies that are doing stuff. They're actually – they have to – let me put it this way. They can't grade out higher and then put the label on it and say it's choice. So you can't get a prime roast and say it's choice. You can't dumb down the product.
Mm-hmm.
So they're losing some money, actually, by doing too good a job. How's that sound?
I'm not surprised. I mean, animal husbandry has progressed a great deal. One of the things that we're noticing is that the animals are getting larger,
mm-hmm.
and the rib primal is getting bigger and heavier. Now, that rib primal is where the ribeye steak comes from, and you can just take this big old roast and cut it into individual steaks. And if you've bought a full ribeye steak lately, you may have noticed it's bigger than your hand.
Oh, yeah.
And it wasn't always that way. It was always smaller. And that's partially because the animals are getting larger.
Well, they are. I don't want to say they've altered. They've improved the genetics. They've improved the time that they can actually get to the point where they're finishing the animal before harvest. And yet they're doing it in a natural way. They're not pumping them full of steroids. And
the feed is improving, too. They've learned a lot about how to get the most mileage out of each animal.
Well, you know, and that's true with us. I mean, it's kind of a correlation, you know. You and I don't do that particularly, but for people that eat rather healthy, they know how to get the optimum nutrition out of, you know, their kale and Brussels sprout cereal. You know, you and me with the maple bars with the bacon on top, maybe not so much, but
oh God, I stumbled into the other day somebody brought some donuts over, and it was a maple glaze with bacon, and my God, that was fantastic.
I gotta tell you a quick story. My mother-in-law, God rest her soul, she went away a couple months ago, but she was always quite the character. And one day, there's a place in Portland called Voodoo Donuts, which makes all kinds of fun and crazy donuts, and it's just a lot of fun. So I bring home a box from Voodoo Donuts, and on one of them, I had them double frost a maple bar, and then there was two pieces of bacon on it, okay? And I said, look, Grandma, look what I brought for you. And she goes, I can't eat that bacon. And I said, oh, okay. So I went in the kitchen, I pulled the bacon off, I put it on a paper towel on the counter. Now, mind you, that bacon now has maple frosting all over it. I take her back in the maple bar, which weighs about a pound and a half, and she wolfs that thing down like crazy. Okay, no problem. I come back about 20 minutes later, and it's only her and me there that day, and that bacon is gone. Lick clean. Lick clean. It was all good.
Oh, that's funny.
So when you go to the store, we got about 1 minute. So let's try to make David happy today, which is impossible for me to do. But when you go look at what you want in a roast, how do you pick it out?
My standard Christmas roast is 7 bone, which is the maximum normally. 28 day. Wet age. Now you can. There's a difference between dry age and wet age. We can talk about that. But I usually order the wet age because I'm serving a big crowd, and I know that'll be a hit.
Yep.
USDA prime or top choice, and there's actually some gradation to choice. And top choice is where it's a little more marbled than most, but not quite as marbled as prime. And so I'll order top choice or prime, and I butcher it myself. You can ask them to butcher it for you. And when we come back, let's talk about how to butcher a prime rib.
Yep, we will do that. Great timing, by the way. You should be in radio. We're going to take We're going to take a break here on Barbecue Nation. We're going to be back with Meathead Goldwyn from AmazingRibs.com, our faithful, tried and true buddy here on the Nation. Don't go away. Hey, welcome back to Barbecue Nation. I'm JT. We've got Meathead with us here today. We're talking about Christmas roasts, and we'll talk a little more than just beef here a little later in the show. If you'd like to email us, it's barbecuenation@alphamediausa.com. That's alphamediausa.com. A couple of our affiliates, KFLS in Klamath Falls and KLBM in La Grande. Also, you can find us on Facebook, Barbecue Nation with JT. And I want to do a quick shout out to a couple of people that actually listen to the show, but they are nowhere near close to the West Coast. Dan Hardy back in North Carolina, Dan. And Shan Bone back in New Jersey. Okay, so I got that right. So Shan and Dan, I don't think they're related at all, but they're faithful listeners, and I sent them a prize. So there you go. How about that? So we were talking about trimming our own rib. If you're comfortable doing it, I am, and I know Meathead is, there's some ways to do it. I'm going to let Meathead give you his examples of that. But you can save a little money when you buy in bulk. You don't have to, you know, you don't have to cook it all at one time. If you only need, you know, four ribs, you want to save three for New Year's or somebody's birthday or no particular special occasion, you can do that. So take it away, big guy.
Well, there's a number of ways to approach it, and I actually have some video on this on AmazingRibs.com. If you go there and just search for prime rib, it'll take you to the page we have devoted to prime rib, and there's some video there. But you start with this big old hunk of meat, 15, 18 pounds, and about 20 to 30% of it is fat cap. There's a very thick layer of fat on there, and they don't normally trim it off at the butcher. If your butcher does, you've got a really great butcher. But they sell it to you like that because they can get premium price for that fat. But the thing is, and this is going to surprise a lot of your listeners, and they're all going to say I'm nuts and hang up, and I'm sorry to do this to you, JT, but that fat adds nothing to the flavor of the meat. Zero, zilch, no way, no how. That fat cap is fat.
Yeah.
The meat is 70% water.
Yeah.
Fat and water don't mix. You can cook the heck out of that, and that fat will melt, but it cannot penetrate the meat. Fat and water don't mix. This is a well-known fact among meat scientists, but a lot of cookbooks are under the misimpression that somehow this fat will baste your meat and flavor the meat, and it cannot, under any circumstances, do so. Now, if you make up a really good spice rub and sprinkle it all over that roast and put it on top of that fat cap and you cook it and you serve it, the first thing that happens is your guests are going to cut all that fat off, and there goes your spice rub. So I recommend you remove almost all of that fat cap if you wish. Leave a quarter inch or so, because that will melt down. It'll be very flavorful, and you'll have a very thin layer that people will gladly eat, and your spice rub will sit on top of that. Otherwise, get rid of all that fat cap, and that's almost 20% of the weight of the meat.
Yeah,
it
works out. I'll tell you, I don't mean to interrupt you, but what I do is I trim most of that off. I probably leave maybe 10% of it around like that, and the rest of it, I just cut it off and throw it away.
Yeah, and often underneath that fat, there's what we call a silver skin.
Yeah.
And this is very, very tough connective tissue. It's made of a compound called elastin, and it's like elastic, and it can shrink. It can be very chewy. So if you peel off the fat cap, you can get at the silver skin and remove the silver skin. Now, you may not want to throw it all away, though. You might want to take some hunks of the cleaner white fat and freeze that and use that for grinding into burger meat at a later time. You can, if you buy lean burger meat,
yep,
you might want to mix some of the ground fat in there in order to add some flavor.
No, I do that. I make a little bag of grind, is what I call it. I just write grind on it and throw it in the freezer, and then a couple times a year when I buy, if you will, lesser quality hamburger, somebody regrind it and put some of that fat in it. It's great.
Yep, absolutely. Now, the next step is the bones. Now, a lot of people think that the bones add flavor. Again, another myth that has been around forever. If you're going to do a stew, if you're going to put the meat and the bones in a crock pot or something, or in a stew, a lot of people do this with short ribs, the bones and the meat in a stew, the water will dissolve some of the marrow and pull it out and add tremendous flavor to the stew. Water is a solvent. That's
right.
Why we wash our hands with it. But in dry cooking, in a roasting environment like an oven or in a smoker or a grill, that marrow cannot escape the bone. It is surrounded by a quarter inch of calcium. Calcium has no flavor. It cannot, under any circumstances, add to the flavor of the meat. It is, in fact, a heat shield. It blocks the heat from reaching the meat so that the meat closest to the bone is almost always less cooked than the meat on the other side. And the ideal situation is to get the meat cooked evenly throughout. So, again, I recommend you peel off those bones, and now you have a slab of back ribs.
Yep.
And they're different than short ribs. Short ribs have a lot of meat on top of the bones. Back ribs have most of the meat between the bones. And they make a fabulous meal. 7-bone back rib rack is enough to feed 2, possibly 3. And it's a great meal. You just roast it in the oven or on your grill or smoker. And it's wonderful flavor. And so now you've got 2 meals. You've got your prime rib and your back ribs. And what you've done now is you've opened up a third of the surface, because your spice rub, everybody loves the surface, the crust of that roast. And what if you leave the meat, the bones on, you're hiding a third of the surface.
Yep.
By removing the meat, the bones, you expose more meat to the rub, more surface, and now you can cinch that meat into a tube that is round. And when it's round, it will cook more evenly. All sides will cook at the same rate. You won't have a section that's overdone or underdone as you will if you leave the bones on the meat.
Yep.
So,
meathead, we got to take a break.
Cinch it into a tube.
We got to take a break. We're going to be back. I'm way over, but that's okay. David will have a fit. We'll be right back on Barbecue Nation with Meathead. Talk more about prime rib and Christmas right after this. I'm JT with Meathead today. I hope you're enjoying the Christmas music in between the breaks there. This portion of Barbecue Nation is brought to you by Painted Hills Natural Beef. If you can, get yourself a Painted Hills Natural Beef rib roast for Christmas. You will not regret it. And also by Barclays down in Woodburn. If you need a place to go find gold or silver or some lovely expensive jewelry, try a Barclays in Woodburn.
Hey, you know, when it comes to Christmas gifts, now I've been married 44 years. So, I mean, I am always saved by buying jewelry. You know, you can never go wrong getting your wife jewelry.
No, that is true. That is true. Because I've been married almost 30 years. And, I can tell you that survival of the fittest has nothing to do with your physical prowess. It's how to present something in a little box that is shiny. How's that?
Yeah, actually, I went so far as to, when she wasn't here, go to the jewelry box and inventory it, make a spreadsheet. So I now know exactly how much turquoise she has, how much silver she has, and so on. So I can look at the spreadsheet and say, oh, look, she doesn't have lapis earrings yet.
Boom. That's a good idea. That is a very good idea. Okay, now, we've got the prime rib trimmed. We've got the fat off. We've got it seasoned.
And a good seasoning rub is nice. Now, you definitely need salt.
Right.
And it's really a good idea to put the salt on the day before if you can. So you want to do all your trimming the day before. I pick up my meat on the 23rd, trim it up on the 24th, serve it on the 25th, salt it the day before. What happens, salt, we've talked about this a little bit. Let me just cover it briefly again. Salt is magic. Salt is unlike any other herb and spice that you have. Salt is just a little atom of sodium and a little atom of chloride, and they get wet on the surface of the meat, and when they do, they get an electrical charge, and they can migrate deep into the center of the meat. Nothing else can get beyond the surface. Your garlic, your rosemary, your sugar, paprika, all of those compounds are too large to migrate into the center of the meat, and they don't get the electrical charges like the sodium chloride does. The rest of the herbs just sit there on the surface. They might creep into some cracks and crevices, but they can't get down into the center of the meat. And, of course, if you think about it, when you carve up a roast, the center of the meat doesn't have any of those flavors. All of that's on the crust, on the surface.
Right.
But salt can go down in there. And what salt does is it amplifies flavor without altering it. Garlic alters the flavor. Sugar can alter the flavor. But salt also denatures the protein, affects the shape of the protein so that it will retain moisture. So it helps hold on to moisture. It makes the meat juicier. So the rule of thumb is a half a teaspoon per pound of meat of kosher salt. If you're using regular table salt, you use half that amount or a quarter teaspoon per pound. And you sprinkle that on there the night before, and you don't need to worry about the rest of the seasonings. You can add them just before you cook or at any time. They're just not going anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to make like a little paste. You mix it with some water or some oil, and that way it'll stick better to the surface.
Yeah.
And spread it on there really good.
That's what I do. I use a little oil, and because I use, of course, salt and pepper, and I use some garlic, and I use some marjoram and a few things like that, and I kind of make this paste on it before I roast it, and it's quite good. But one of my questions is, on the chemistry aspect of that, what about garlic salt? Does the salt molecule go down in the salt?
Garlic salt is nothing but garlic and salt mixed.
Right.
And most of your commercial rubs, when you buy rubs, they have salt added to them. Now, you want to add the salt based on the amount of meat or the weight of meat. But all the other stuff, because it doesn't go beyond the surface, you want to apply it based on the number of square inches. Now, that all sounds mathematical, but here, think of this. A slab of ribs has more surface area and less middle than a pork roast.
Mm-hmm.
So a slab of ribs needs less salt than a pork roast, which is big, fat, and thick and heavy. So ideally you don't want salt in your rubs. Almost all your commercial rubs have salt in them, and one of the main reasons is they can jack up the price by adding salt, which is cheap. It's much better to make your own rubs. I've got a really good beef rub on our website called Big Bad Beef Rub, and it has no salt. None of my rub recipes have salt. You apply the salt and the spices separately because you apply the salt based on the weight of the meat and the spice rub on the surface. And so you apply them in a different ratio. It's like driving your car. You can stop your car by stepping on the brake or stop your car by lifting your foot off the accelerator. They work together in tandem, but they're not the same. So I recommend you make your own rubs, and that way you can also use them on things like hams, which are already pre-salted. You don't want to add any more salt to them. So always separate the two.
You can also stop your car by hitting an immovable object.
Or throw it in reverse.
That's true, too. And I've done that. 40 miles an hour down McLaughlin one night years ago.
Or the parking brake. So all of those work. But they work separately from the accelerator.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. So how do you actually – now we've got 4 minutes before we have to go to break. So how does Meathead roast his – rib roast?
If you have like a whole big prime rib and you're only serving like 10 people, you can peel that muscle off with your bare hands, and it looks like a giant salmon fillet. It tapers on one end, and it's thin, and it's thick on the other, and it is the tastiest muscle on the steer. It is heavily marbled. It's almost like Wagyu or Kobe beef. And it almost always overcooks because it's on the outer edge, and it builds up more heat on the outer edge, and it's almost always gray. And if you peel that baby off and set it aside, now you have the rib bones for an extra meal. You can have the rib cap for an extra meal. And now you have the tubular longissimus muscle, or the eye of the ribeye, to roast for your Christmas dinner. Now you've peeled off a lot of fat, a lot of bone, and the spinalis, or the rib cap, you're down to about half the original weight. So if you've got a 14-pound prime rib, you're down to about 7 pounds of meat. But you've got the eye of the ribeye, and it's a gorgeous roast. And you've got two other meals set aside.
What I do is I cut the meat off the rib, the rack, whatever you want to call it. I cut it like that. I season it. I trim it. I season it. I tie it back on there because my daughter and a couple of her friends always are around, and they happen to like that rack, and they trim it off. And anyway, they happen to like it for the after Christmas, before bedtime snack.
Yeah, it's so much fun chewing on those bones.
Oh, man.
Especially when they get crispy.
Yep.
But I'll make the argument that when you put the seasoning under there, it's not cooking. So you've got raw seasoning pretty much. And you've also got that heat shield in the way.
Right.
And if you think about it, the meat sitting alongside of that heat shield is going to be raw or rare if you cook it to medium rare in the center. While the outside, and if you leave the spinalis on, that's the best part of the animal, that part gets cooked to well done. So you've got well done rib cap and raw meat alongside the bone. If you peel that baby off and you cook it separately, you can cook it at the same time. If you don't want to save it for a second meal, throw it on the cooker and just roast those bones separately, or throw those bones in a pot and make a gravy, a jus, to go with it. There's so many things you can do. I would argue that it's always better to get those bones out of there.
Oh, I understand, but I'm not going to argue with my daughter either. So anyway, we're going to take
and I'm not going to argue with you either.
No.
I'll wrestle you over it.
Okay, there you go. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back and wrap up the Christmas show about cooking prime rib with our buddy Meathead. Welcome back to Barbecue Nation here on the Radio Northwest Network and KUFO, KXTG here in downtown Portland, and say hi to everybody and all the people that listen out there on the SoundCloud. We're setting some new numbers. We're going to release those numbers probably at the end of the year, but that's great. And I thank you for doing that. Pay attention, though, to Facebook and stuff, because we throw a little prize trivia at you every once in a while. In fact, you were Meathead, you were one of the questions for a prize. Did you
I
know?
Am questionable.
Yes, I know that. But I asked what you did to your turkey every Thanksgiving before you cooked it. I got a variety of answers. Some of them we can't talk about on the
yeah.
air. But there was two of them, and the one I was looking for, of course, was spatchcock, but the other one was dry brine. And so we had a couple of listeners who I mentioned earlier in the show. They both got that correct, and so they got a prize, and that's all fun. It's all fun. Okay, so when you're cooking, what do you do? Do you put it on your? You put it in the oven? You put it on a rotisserie? Do you put it on the on your charcoal and your Weber? What do you do?
Well, I'm an outdoor guy, you know, and barbecue and grilling is sort of my thing. But you know, a grill is really just an oven that's outdoors with a lousy thermometer. I like to cook it outdoors. I like to get a little of that smoke flavor into the crust. But I think it's a really important technique. Again, I'm going to shock a number of your people. The basic rule of thumb in cooking meat is the lower the temperature, the better. Now, I know there's a bazillion recipes out there that have you cooking at 400 to 500 degrees. But it's just a basic meat science fact that protein shrinks when it's exposed to heat. And when it shrinks, it squeezes out water. And water is juiciness. And it's and you want juicy meat. And by the way, that red juice that comes out of the meat is not blood. And every time you call it blood, a bell rings, and somewhere in Indiana, a teenager becomes a vegan. It's not blood. It's just water that's been stained pink by a protein called myoglobin, or the meat scientists call it myowater. So, I mean, if it was blood, it would be the same color as your blood, very dark, mm-hmm. very thick, and it would coagulate. And this stuff is thin, and it's watery, and it's runny. So it's just water, and that's what 70% of the meat is it's water.
And it's really good on potatoes.
Yes, it is. So you're going to take this baby, and you're going to put it either in the oven at a low temperature. I like 225. Then you're going to gently cook it. And what I typically do is I take it out to my grill, and I'll set up my grill in two zones. I'll push all the charcoal to one side and leave nothing on the other side, or on a gas grill, I'll turn on one burner on high and leave the other burners off. And I'll put it over the off side where there's no fire, and it sits there gently roasting at about 225 in indirect convection airflow. And I'll bring it up to about 120 to 125 degrees interior temperature. You cook with a thermometer, not with a clock. The clock and the weight of the meat cannot tell you when it's done. Every cookbook that says 20 minutes per pound or something like that is wrong, 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 wrong. It's the thickness of the meat that determines how long it takes to cook. So you cook it up to about 120 to 125, which is still rare on the indirect convection air side. And when it hits that temp, you lift the lid of your grill and you move it over the direct heat. Now you've got radiant heat. Infrared radiant heat pounding on the underside, and the upside is sitting there in cool air. And so you're searing the exterior. And when you get a good brown crust, you rotate it a quarter turn. And when you get a good brown crust, you rotate a quarter turn until you've got a good brown crust on all sides. And by that time, the center should be around 130 degrees, which is perfect medium rare. At medium rare, it is most tender and most juicy, right around 130 to 135. If you want it really, really red and juicy and still mooing, 125. But 130 to 135 is optimum for me, and you can do that with a digital thermometer. And so now you've seared it at the end of the cooking, and so you haven't loaded up the exterior of the cut with energy at the beginning of the cook, and so you will have an even temperature edge to edge. If you sear it at the beginning of the cook, you load up the exterior of the meat with energy, and you're going to get the edges and the outer layer overcooked. You'll have a gray to brown outer layer, and as much as a third of the meat will be overcooked.
There you go. We're out of time, as usual. Who would notice? But Meathead will be back. Meathead will be back on the 29th, I think it is. And we're going to be talking about New Year's stuff and survival of New Year's and food for New Year's. So it won't be a long farewell. It'll be a short farewell for Meathead. And for everybody else here at The Nation, I wish you a very Merry Christmas, and we will talk to you very soon. Bye now.